Do. Okay, let's get rocking and rolling. Let's get everybody in here. Do. Let's admit all. Everyone's coming in. Let's rename. Okay. Typing in my name. Hugh Janus. No, we'll go Chris. We'll go Chris. Welcome everybody. Come on in. Just bringing everyone in right now. How's everybody's Wednesday going?
So far, so good.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Okay. Come on in. Come on in. Well, we're gonna get rocking and rolling. I got a lot I want to talk about today. Let me just make all my adjustments here. Good. There we go. Okay. So we know how these Wednesday night calls go. We always like to start off by sharing a few wins. These wins could be amongst your training. These wins could be amongst your health. These wins could be something happened in your personal life. These wins could be something sport related, family related, whatever it is. Well, let's go around the call here. And if you'd like to, and I'd like you to, a few people here, why don't you share some wins you've got in the last little bit? You can unmute yourself or you can type in the chat some wins you've got. I know a few guys on here got some wins. Patrick, why don't you share some of your wins? You've had a pretty good streak this last month.
I had a pretty good streak. So since I started with you guys in January, I'm down 50 pounds. Blood pressure is down 30 to 40 points, so it's down to the acceptable range now. Mobility's kicking up. Body's moving in the good direction right now, so that's good for a guy with two artificial hips. So I'm pretty proud.
You should be proud. I mean, you're putting the work in, and I'll pat your stats a little bit there. Beyond that, you're continually getting your workouts in. One of the things that I've found that you've done really well is when we have our calls, we're always going over what's the upcoming week look like and how do we need to or what do we need to adjust. So if you're traveling, we try to source food differently, possibly bringing supplementation, modify the workouts around. So it's a forward thought process that you have. Because this is a new version of you. This is Patrick 2.0. You now think of your health before you have to go and do something else. And one of the things that was kind of cool was Patrick didn't really do a lot of training before he kind of came into this program. Some of the guys tend to already be training, then they come in, and you kind of came in with a minimal training in the last a few years leading up to it, and you've done quite well. So congratulations so far. Who else would like to share some wins? Let me see. Target weight, 95 kilos for Rob. Rob, tell me more about that. Were you trying to get up to 95? Were you trying to get down to 95? Is this a lift?
Down. So I'm on the treadmill. So probably my height was about 117 kilos. My biggest when I started with Andrew, more like fluctuating around 109, 110 kilos. So probably down about 15. So it's that 35, 40 pounds or something.
That's awesome. How long is that? Like, when did you start? How long has it been? This journey?
With Andrew, about 5 months.
Oh, that's awesome, man. If you were to identify one key thing that has led you to this being down and away, what's the one thing that you're like, hey, this one thing led me to the greater amount of results?
Consistency of nutrition and training, and a lot of zone two.
A lot of zone two. Yeah, I would attest for sure that the consistency is a key thing in any aspect of health. It's always the consistency thing. That magic pill doesn't exist yet, where you just take it and all of a sudden, bloop, you're healthy. You got to do certain things over and over and over and over again and get consistent, and then you'll get the great results. That's good. Awesome. Congratulations. Take one more win. I'd also like to share some of their wins in the last 30, 60, 90. Dave, I do this call only once a month. So some of these guys here, I'm not too sure how you've been doing. Paul, what about yourself? You got any wins to share?
I think this past week I increased barbell bench press and to like a high weight of like 135 pounds in total. And yeah, first time I did that for trying to work for the 1,000 pound club, I could barely get up for the last rep.
Oh,
So working
nice.
on th yeah,
That's
got more
awesome. So,
confidence with that.
what have you been doing to increase your bench press?
So the training worked more towards a 1,000 pound club, just reducing weight to build up confidence with that and working up again from that.
Awesome. So you're focusing on like a technique,
Yeah.
right? Wicked. That's a nice segue as we go into what I'm going to present on you guys today. This is the Strength Fix presentation. So how to overcome plateaus and keep getting stronger. This is something that's kind of very important for a lot of people, a lot of us men. We always want to get stronger. Who doesn't want to get stronger? If you think of where you currently are now, think what would be different if you were stronger? Because strength in one area doesn't always correlate in strength in another area. If I could increase a lift in the gym, it could be an overhead press. It could be a bench press, you know, like Paul did there. It could be a back squat. It could be a deadlift, kind of like the big compound movements. What does that do outside of the gym? What's the change in my life? And this is a question I'm posing for you guys here. If we get stronger in the gym, how could that, it doesn't have to be you specifically, but how could that affect our lives outside of the gym? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I got a thought. Chris, so I work a lot in construction and even just around the house. So one of the main motivations to getting stronger, get fit again, is just moving around with the grandkids, moving around in daily life, doing chores around the house, just feeling better in your own skin.
I imagine that when we get stronger in the gym, those activities such as playing with the grandkids, moving around the house, they just become easier.
Absolutely, yeah.
If you can, Paul, if you can bench press 135, then anything that weighs less than 135, you can push. You can push away from you. If you can deadlift 225, there's probably nothing in your house you can't lift. If you think about it. Now, obviously leverages play a role. You know, those stoves, sometimes maybe a deep freeze because it's long might be different. But the reality is if you can lift 225 pounds off the ground and stand up with it, there's probably nothing at your house that you can't lift. I think it's important, and I think it's a nice feeling to have that. And it kind of sets a level of confidence. Okay, now I can lift everything. I can push everything in my house. And who mentioned it here? Nathaniel. Yeah, confidence. That's a good one there. Positive mentality. One of the benefits that I have of working in fitness is I can go into any gym in the world and I feel pretty competent and confident in exercising and doing anything there. I can walk into a gym, there could be a set of kettlebells over on the corner. Laura, I'm like, I know how to use kettlebells. There's a barbell over there in a rack. I know how to squat. Right? Oh, there's a fitness class going on, like a spin class. I know how to bike. It's a pretty cool feeling because there's some aspects in people's lives, and mine included. If I walked into a law firm, I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know who to talk to. I wouldn't know anything about that. That's not my thing. But in the gym, the stuff we do in the gym can carry over into our day-to-day stuff at home. And it's also a nice thing to be able to be confident and competent in all the stuff that we do in the gym as well.
I was actually
Today, I'm
going
going
to
to
say on the,
go ahead.
sorry, my point about the positive was also not just the strength bit, but like when you achieve something, when you achieve a goal, for me, I kind of go, I did the really hard thing. I was able to increase my strength. Then when I get that hungry and I want a snack or I'm tired with the kids and I want to skip the gym, I go, no, I know I can do it. I did the hard thing. I lifted the thing. I can do this. This is easy.
Every morning we all wake up and we have so much amount of willpower. So it's not too often we roll out of bed and we crave ice cream and cake. But that 9 p.m., 10 p.m. when we're gassed out, we're tired, we're mentally fatigued, our willpower is much lower. Research has been done with people when they gave them caloric deficit diets to lose body fat, and then they gave other groups caloric deficit diets to lose body fat, and they gave them resistance training. What they did was they followed up with these groups afterwards to see who kept the weight off. Guess what? The group that also did the weight training kept the weight off in higher numbers. And they didn't keep the weight off in higher numbers because they were just burning calories. Because the reality is if you do a training session of weights, you're burning 250, 350 calories, depending on your body size. It's not a lot of, I mean, that's three apples, that's half a slice of cake. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a big caloric expenditure. But people who exercise more regularly, they maintained more motivation or more discipline, or I like to say, had higher amounts of willpower for weight loss. So imagine if not just exercising, we're accomplishing things in the gym. We are getting stronger. We worked hard at something. We're getting these dopamine hits. It says, hey, I can do something. I like that feeling. We almost get addicted to it. So for today's presentation, we're going to talk about how to get more of that. How do we bust through some plateaus that we might have when it comes to strength training? So what we're going to do first is we have to identify a kind of a two-step system. Step number one, we have to identify the fundamentals of getting stronger. So if you've been on these first week calls with me before, I've talked about some of these in a little bit more detail. One is to get stronger, we first need a measurement. What do we want to get stronger in? And how are we going to measure that? So, Paul, you already mentioned you increased your barbell bench press. So that is the measurement, is the weight that goes on the bar. Jeff just finished a strength cycle with me, and strength, or Jeff, would you like to go over? Could you just say the number increases that you got on your lifts?
Sure. So, probably got about, well, probably. So, barbell back squat was a 40-pound increase, 10-pound increase on the deadlift, 10-pound increase on the bench press, and then overhead press was even. So.
Yeah. So the way we measured Jeff's progress was that we had him test to see where his current strength is. He then went through a training program. Then we retested later on, and we just went to see what the difference are. So it's a measurement. Now we have to figure out what do we want to get stronger in. Some of us might say, like, I want to be stronger at home. I want to be able to go and play 18 holes of golf and carry my bag the whole time. I might want to be able to get up at any time of the day and be able to do a deep body weight squat. I might want to have the ability to run a 5K and not blow out my Achilles. So when we talk about strength, we need to measure what do we want to be stronger in. If you want to be able to run 5K any day of the week and not blow out your Achilles, you need to have Achilles tendon strength. You need to have calf strength, and you need to run. So it makes perfect sense that if you want to get something out of it, you need a measurement first, then you have to train that. The second thing is the technique. You need to identify what are the fundamentals of the technique. So Paul, you did the bench press. You lied on your back, you held a bar and your arms extended, the bar touched your chest and it came back up. Am I right? Okay, that's your technique. With Jeff, we talked about how far does he need to squat down? We're going to call that your adequate depth on your squat. So if I kept adding weight, I said, you got to keep going to the same range of motion. And if you're not going to that range of motion, it's either because it's too much weight, maybe you're not aware, or some people they get scared. So we have to have a technique standard and stick to that standard every time. If we don't stick to the standard, we can get false positives. If everyone here could just visualize what is their current max of a barbell back squat. If you said, okay, we're testing right now, I could probably put this on the side, boom, and I could hit that. So I just want you right now to think of what is that number in your head? That number is about here. Okay, you're going to need a one-on-one training session with me, a live session. I'm going to put that weight on the bar. I'm going to say, stand up out of the rack, walk out two steps, hold it. Then I'm going to take a 25, I'm going to slide it on one side, and a 25, I'm going to slide it on the other. It's now 50 pounds heavier. And I'm going to say go down and come back up. The chances of anyone in here being able to go down and come back up at the standard depth is going to be quite low. What we would naturally do is we would go down maybe a quarter of the way or half of the standard way and then come back up. So our technique changed because of the weight on the bar. When we want to get stronger, we can't let our technique change. We have to have a standard somewhere, and that has to stay the same over and over again. That leads to strength improvements, not changing your technique because of the weight. Your technique should determine the weight on the bar, not the weight on the bar should determine your technique. The third aspect of getting stronger, and these are some of the general guidelines, but they all work really good. It's called progressive overload. So progressive overload can be explained in a lot of complex terms, but the easiest way to do it is you need to lift more weight over time. Now, as coaches, we can modify those weights differently. We can put more weight per set. We can put more total weight per workout. We can put more weight on the bar per rep. So the way you would measure that is you could look at if you're doing a 100-pound back squat for 5 reps and you're going to do it for 3 sets, that's going to be 1,500 total pounds. But if I said do it for 4 sets, we're now at 2,000. If I said do it for 5 sets, we're at 2,500. I could say take 80 pounds and do it for 30 total reps over 6 sets. Your volume is now higher. So you're now actually lifting more weight, even though your average weight that you're lifting is lower. It's 80 instead of 100. That is one way to progressively overload your training. And that stimulus leads to the adaptation of getting stronger. So it's not always just adding more weight. If we added 2.5 pounds on one lift every Monday, the chances of us getting stronger are going to be high, but the chances of us plateauing before a year end is almost 100%. So even if it was bench press, if you think about it, 2.5 pounds, that's 10 pounds a month. That's the 120 pounds in a year. That's not realistic for a lot of human beings to put on 120 pounds on their bench press in 12 months. So we can't just add weight every time we go into the gym, every workout. We'll start changing our technique. So we identify the fundamentals of getting stronger. We've got to make sure we're meeting those. If we're not meeting those, we're probably plateauing. Step number two, we need to identify what is holding you back from getting stronger. So I'll open up the floor now to anyone on this call here. Whether you've tried to get stronger before and you didn't, or just some thoughts that come to mind if you've been in fitness for a while or you work in fitness, what do you think stops people from getting stronger?
Stability, form.
Stability. Hold on, who's talking here?
Have Rob on the treadmill, coughing.
Oh. On the treadmill. Oh, Rob. Okay, so can you elaborate? What do you mean by stability? Give me an example of where I would see that.
I'm thinking if if you probably goes hand in hand with form. Let's say you're benching and you come under pressure and you arch your back and you're not retracting your scapula and you don't have the stability to isolate the muscle you're trying to strengthen. So if you can't stabilize the platform, you're not going to be able to make that muscle grow. You're going to start incorporating shoulders and other bits and pieces, which will limit your strength.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Rob, and what I'm you're saying stability, what I'm hearing is technique. Because if you use the right technique every time, your body adapts to that technique. If you use a unstable technique, every time your body adapts to an unstable technique. So let me give you an example of where this is good and where this is bad. On the bench press, a stable upper body would mean that the shoulder blades are in a retracted and depressed position. So, everyone on this call right now, pull your shoulder blades together as if you're holding a pencil between them. Keeping them together, pull them down towards your back pocket. That is a retracted and depressed scapula. When you're bench pressing and your scapula is retracted and depressed, what that does is it takes your chest muscle and it puts it in more of a decline position. When your pec is in a decline position, it is in a more advantageous position to exert force. It can execute more push. At the same time, when the shoulder's in that position, there is no closing on the infraspinatus muscle. The infraspinatus in the shoulder is one of the rotator cuffs, and it kind of goes underneath the collarbone over here. And when it goes underneath it, on some of us, we have a collarbone end that is kind of like this, kind of like this, and some people it's a little bit more flat. If it's more flat and you don't retract and depress your scapula, every time you're doing reps, what happens is you're getting a little bit of a bone on tissue sawing like motion. What can happen over time is that tissue can become inflamed, it can become frayed, and then eventually it can be strained or torn by doing the bench press. So if I'm lying down on the bench press in an unstable position, like Rob was saying, or my technique's not optimal, I'm actually going to make myself worse over time. So this exercise that I want to use to make myself stronger for something is now hindering my progress. That is technique. You won't have the stability if you don't have the technique. So Rob, you're 100% right. Technique does matter when we're doing lifting. That's one reason why we may not be able to progress. Now, some people will adapt to technique that might be less than optimal. So let me give you an example. In the deadlift, if we're going to pick a bar up off the floor and stand up straight with it, from a stability standpoint, when we bend over to grab that bar, if our spine goes into a forward flex position, there's going to be a protrusion or an anterior pressure, sorry, posterior pressure pushing on the discs. If I load heavy enough, or I do the exercise with enough repetition, over time, I can delaminate that disc, which means kind of wear away. And then if I delaminate and wear away the disc, I can make it more or less stable and push into what's considered a posterior disc bulge. With a posterior disc bulge, sometimes it presses on a nerve. And for most people who do general fitness, that nerve goes down into the sciatica, known as the sciatica nerve. Then you get a lot of pain. So you could get stronger by using a round back technique if the measurement is just lifting the weight off the floor, but the risk sometimes exceeds the reward. Now, you could change that technique and actually have a more flexed upper back, a thoracic position, but you don't have a flexed low back, lumbar position. The thoracic has more vertebrae between it, which means it's got more connective area to stabilize the bar, meaning that it can actually tolerate more than the low back. The low back also doesn't have connective tissues to the diaphragm like the thoracic does. So when we take a big breath in to lift heavy and we bear down and we brace, we lock everything and we come in, that low back area is more susceptible to instability. It's weaker. That L4, L5, S1. And those tend to be the areas where the disc bulges or disc herniations occur. So someone could have an upper back in more of a rounded flex position and actually be pretty strong and adapt with that and be fine. Someone can have a flexed low back and they can get stronger in a short period, but their potential strength will always be limited and they're more than likely to eventually develop some low back discomfort. So that's where technique is so important when it comes to strength training. We have to have the optimal technique for what you want to get out of the exercise. That technique then kind of goes into the next thing here, identifying another thing that might hold people back. It might be your recovery. For some of us, we don't recover like we used to, or we don't recover like we could. You don't have to put your hands up on this one here. But if you're sleeping 6 and less hours a night, you are not recovering well in your training. And if you say, I'm actually recovering pretty, I feel pretty fine off 6 hours sleep, you are also limiting your potential. We're the only species on the planet that deliberately remove sleep from our lives without a survival mechanism. I think it's orcas. They'll stay awake for like 2 days or something, and they swim like they're young to their grandmother or something like that. I don't know. But as for humans, we tend to stay up because there's a new Netflix show on. I got a brand new video game, out on a date, whatever it is. We'll purposely reduce sleep, which can then negatively affect our recovery. Has anyone here ever deadlifted back-to-back days? No, no psychopaths in the group? Okay, good. Rob, you have, haven't you? I bet you have.
Yeah, stupidly.
Stupidly, yeah. So if you've ever done it, you've only done it once, most likely. Because on average, when we deadlift, we lift more weights per repetition than most exercises in the gym. It's more taxing on the nervous system. It's more taxing on the lumbar spine. So what happens is you're not going to recover. That day two is not going to feel as good as day one. But recovery is important for strength. And when you're looking at reasons why you may have plateaued, I always say, let's look at the recovery first. Let's look at then the third thing I would say, the program. Is your programming actually setting you up to get stronger? This could look like something as if the lifts I want to get better in could be a front squat, and it could be a pull-up, weighted pull-up. I want to get stronger at those two exercises. So I front squat twice a week and I do pull-ups twice a week. But maybe I front squat on Monday and Wednesday, and then I do pull-ups on Tuesday and Thursday, and I take Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. Could someone get stronger with a 4 day on, 3 day off split with those types of movements? Yeah, I think they could. Do I think someone could get stronger, more stronger if they spread them out? 100% they could. It would look better to do a front squat on a Monday and a Thursday and a pull-up on a Tuesday and a Saturday. But you just have to stress the body enough that it requires those 4 days in between of the main lift so that then you're able to actually load it even more or do more total volume or do more total work. So sometimes the program can be a hindrance of why we're plateauing and we're not getting stronger. Now, there's this other thing that people don't always talk about that can affect the program positively or negatively, and it's called life. Sometimes life gets in the way. If you have a job that requires you to walk, maybe to the bus stop, and then you got to do a big walk from another stop to another stop, and you may end up putting in 15,000 steps, 20,000 steps a day, and you're trying to increase your leg strength, that might actually be a hindrance. You may not be able to get stronger because you're just not recovering just from walking. If Patrick, I'm sure you've got a lot of guys on the construction sites. And they're killing their bodies every day, working hard. Then they're trying to go to the gym to get strong. They may not be eating enough, sleeping enough, and they're just doing too much physical labor that could be negatively affecting their recovery, which also negatively affect their progress. And that might also be why they plateau. Am I right to say that, Patrick?
Absolutely. Yeah. You get exhausted doing 40, 60 hours of work a week, 40, 5 or 6 days a week. It's brutal on your body. So that's one of the reasons why I was out of the gym for about 20 years. There's no energy left.
I present at this there's this company out here, and they build Amazon buildings. They do all the steel work, they do all the framing and stuff. And I every few years I go down there and I do a little presentation on back health and back safety. And I always ask the guys, I say, just out of curiosity, what do you guys eat for lunch? And a lot of guys, they tell me what they eat for lunch, and the quality of the food is quite low, so it causes an inflammatory response on the body, or the caloric intake is also quite low. Of low quality foods. And I say, if you want to maximize your efforts at work, you're going to need higher qualities, and you're going to need or sorry, higher calories and higher qualities. And if you're also doing strength training outside of work, you really need that stuff there. You're always going to come in a bad state. So if we're not recovering, we're not getting stronger. And then the other area that I would also propose that stops people from getting stronger is going to be injury. The biggest predictor of an upcoming injury is previous injury. So if you've injured your shoulder before, that is most likely the area where you're going to injure again if you've already done it once doing the same exercise. So when you're injured, the chances of you getting stronger are low. So that has to be a priority in your life to heal and get back to normal before you push that. So we don't want to be injured when we're trying to get stronger. So again, the four things that I would say, it's going to be your technique, or as Rob was mentioning, stability, recovery abilities, injury, and then the program that you're looking at as well. So if we know the fundamentals to get strong, and then we know what's holding us back from getting strong, what should we do about it? Well, I got a few different options here for everyone to use. So one thing that you can do, if we're going to look at program, technique, recovery, and injury, program is make sure your program is set up that your stimulus and your recovery are optimal. This would look like doing a hard lift when you're very fresh and then not doing it again until you're fresh. So that's why it's important to have conversations with your coach. That's why I say things to Pat when we get on our call, say, what's going on in the upcoming week? Or Jeff, what's going on in the upcoming, what do I need to know? Just like, oh, I got a couple overnighters at work there. I say, okay, great. If we got overnighters, the chance of you lifting heavy is going to be quite low the day after. So I'm going to switch your program around. I'm going to have you lift heavier early in the week. So you're going to be recovered and stuff. So I don't expect you to lift heavy, sorry, not earlier in the week, but before those shifts, so that your first workout after those shifts, I'm going to purposely give you lighter weights. So the expectation is that you're not going to be able to lift heavy anyway. And if I do overload you on those days, your chance of injury is going to go up. So the second thing to do with technique is identify what is the optimal technique for the lift that you're trying to do. Because just putting plates on the bar is not necessarily going to make you more efficient at it. If you want to do a leg press and you want to increase your leg, if someone says to me, I want to increase my leg press, I say, okay, are we more worried about, are we more are striving to increase the muscle size of our legs or just how much we can push on the leg press? Push on the leg press. Okay, great, good. So right away, I'm not going to emphasize range of motion. If someone just wants to push more plates on the leg press, I'm going to also suggest grabbing knee wraps. Wrap your knees up. It's going to add a little bit of stability at the knee. It's going to give you a bit of a spring. So we could change the parameters of the exercise if the outcome is to be plates being lifted. That's where the technique comes into play. And then recovery. What could we do about recovery? Well, we got to look at a 16-day or 16-hour audit. What are we doing when we're not sleeping? Is that hindering your recovery? Then are we actually sleeping? The gold standard of sleep is about 8 hours. I say about, I never say eight, because different people need different amounts of sleep. If your objective is to put on a bunch of muscle, tip the scale, get really strong, you got to live like a baby. So you got to eat, you got to sleep, and you got to do minimal walking around. Ben would tell stories, he told us stories before where, he would always nap in the afternoon because he was just so gassed from his training and he needed to grow. And you don't grow when you're awake, you grow when you're asleep. So you may be doing all the right training. The technique might be perfect. Your program might be awesome. You may not have any real injuries and stuff, but you're just not sleeping enough. Well, I sleep my 8 hours. Some people need nine. Some people need 10 hours sleep. So that's how we can kind of amplify the recovery. You can't cut weight and get really strong at the same time. It's kind of hard. Because when you're cutting weight, your body's in a stressful situation usually. Cortisol levels tend to go up. That can kind of block the ability to put on muscle mass and can sometimes even affect your sleep and can sometimes even affect your nervous system. So if you want to get strong, I always say get big and strong at the same time. Eat in a caloric surplus. Make sure that your sleep is more than normal. And those are kind of the key things that work really good with that. The other thing you want to do is you want to use what's called supercompensation or supercompensation. Has anyone ever heard of supercompensation before? No? Well, supercompensation is used all the time in Olympic sports, in strength training, in endurance running, and stuff. Essentially, what happens is you overstress the body leading up to when you want it to perform at its best. Every time we go in the gym and we work out, that is a stress. So the stress goes on to the body. Within the next 1 to 2 hours, you're going to be fatigued. Your body's going to be tired. You're going to be, okay, I just worked out. Oh, I'm a little bit tired. In the next 24 to 48 hours, when you're resting, your body is starting to compensate, starting to adapt and saying, listen, I just got this massive stress put on my body. I need to get better in cases I'm going to get hit with that again. Around the 72-hour mark, so around the third day, the body goes into what's called a rebound. So it's almost at a high ability to replicate what you did, but maybe a little bit better. Now that works for an average person who has average stresses in their life. If someone's got a lot of stresses, physical stresses, emotional stresses, they may not be able to get that rebound effect of the 72 hours. If you really trash your body hard, that can end up being about 6 or 7 days later where you super compensate. So we do this in powerlifting all the time. I will stress my body 10 days out from a competition. And this might look like doing 30 doubles at a high weight. Might be a 2 hour session of just doing 30 doubles, where the next day I'm like, well, I can barely walk. My body is wrecked. But then all of a sudden, 9 days later, 10 days later, I take that same weight and all of a sudden it's flying. But it was going pretty slow around sets 21, 22, 23. My body is super compensated. But what also has to happen in that time period is everything else has to be drawn downward. So my total volume has to go down. My intensity over the next few days has to go down as well. My sleep has to go up. Depending on food, if I'm cutting weight or maintaining weight, food's got to be adjusted as well. But you can use those tactics to allow yourself to try to time things well. And then all of a sudden, your nervous system is tuned exactly to go and do your thing. So in your strength programs, and Jeff, you can attest to this, we would have kind of like early in the week was kind of heavy and hard. And then all of a sudden the workouts were kind of easy. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now let's actually try to max out. That's because we were trying to create a super compensated situation. The heavier you lift, the longer that duration goes. So if I coach petite women, and I do, I coach some petite women in powerlifting. We can do that 4 days out. I coach some super heavyweight boys and they pull in the 600s, they bench in the 400s. With those types of numbers, we're 10 to 14 days out where we use something like that because they're lifting so much more. It takes a little bit more for their body to super compensate. So you can use this with your programming and your coach as well. And if you're like, hey, I want to test on this day, then just be aware that we need to. You need to go heavier that 7 to 10 days out, and then not 1 day out, not 2 days out. The other thing we can do to bust through plateaus is train in the weak ranges. Now, what are the weak ranges? Usually, it's when the muscle's in a lengthened position the most. So, if I'm going to use an exercise like a bench press, the weak range is usually right down here in the bottom. It's kind of rare when someone gets up to here and they're like, oh, I can't finish it. But they're here and they get it off the chest and they got nothing. That's the weak ranges. So if that's a weak range in a bench press, you'd want to program in time in that weak range. One count pauses, two count pauses, three count pauses. You can change your grip. So on bench press, if this was my normal bench press grip, if I go more narrow and I bring the bar down, I've now increased the range of my pecs. So now I can train the weak range in an actual greater range. I could do deficit push-ups. I could do dumbbell presses because usually on average, the dumbbell goes further in the chest than a barbell would. So I can train the weak range like that. Where do we all think the weak range is in any variation of a squat? John, you pointed either to the center of the octagon and you want to throw down with me, or you meant at the bottom of the squat,
At the
right?
bottom of the squat.
Yeah, the bottom of the squat tends to be where we're weakest. So when we go to the bottom of the squat, we tend to actually be able to get to the bottom and get like a little bit of a 1 to 2 inch rebound. And that's usually a stretch shortening cycle. It's like a rebound of the calf and the hamstring making contact. But that's the tissues giving you that rebound, not the strength. But you're right, the weak point of the squat tends to be in the bottom. So, where should we program doing more work in the bottom of the squat. So that could look like pause squat, one count, two count, three count. That could look like a greater range of motion. Because if we established, and we did this with Jeff, I said, okay, if we're going to use a squat as your strength exercise for your lower body, I want the crease of your hip to get below the top of your thigh. That's going to be our standard every time. If he was really weak in the bottom, I could program in a greater range. I could say, I want you squatting 2 inches below that, because we're going to train that weak range. Just one sec. I got a fan here. What's up, buddy?
I'm gonna go outside. Can I come and snow pitch up?
Yes, yes, you can.
It's so snowy.
It's snowing? Oh, love being in Canada. Okay, go outside and play. 1 degrees Celsius today. I celebrated the heat. But we're gonna get to 12 on Saturday. Pretty excited. I'll pull out the sunscreen. So I would program more time in that weak range of a squat. Now, this one gets a little different for people. Now, what about the deadlift? Trap bar deadlift, conventional deadlift, sumo deadlift. Where do you think the weak range tends to be for people or yourselves? The bottom?
I would say the bottom.
The bottom. So, what would that look like if the weak range was in the bottom? If someone's weak on the deadlift in the bottom, would the plates come off the ground? No. They would be stapled to the floor. So if you're doing a deadlift and you're adding weight and you lift it and you add weight and you lift it and you add weight and it doesn't budge a millimeter off the floor, your weak point is in that bottom position. Now, in the conventional deadlift, most people can exert a lot of force to get it off the floor. And the weak point of the conventional deadlift tends to be three quarters of the way up. It's the lockout. So we've seen maybe yourselves or people in the gym, they get off the floor, they get it past the knees, and they shake, 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 and they can't finish the lockout. So in the deadlift, the weak point tends to be on average, not always, but on average, it's going to be the top quarter of the lockout. Now, if your technique is ideal, it's optimal for a conventional deadlift, that's where you should always miss your lift. If you miss your lift breaking the floor in your conventional lifter, your technique either needs work or you jumped too much, like what Jeff did on his overhead press. Jeff was testing and he went from one number and took a huge amount of weight to the next number and he couldn't get the next number. This is too big of a jump. At that point, we forgive you though, Jeff. Don't worry about it. We forgive you. But in the deadlift, like let's say for example, you want to pull 400 and you do 315. Yeah, I felt really good. And then you just throw a fourth plate on it. I'm gonna go 405 now, and it doesn't budge off the ground. That ain't technique. That ain't weakness on the bottom position. That's just too big of a jump. You would need to be a little bit closer to your actual max there. Now the sumo deadlift is different. The sumo deadlift is actually harder to break the floor. It's much easier at the lockout because your initial press off the ground is from a wider base of support, and a wider base of support does not exert the same amount of force into the ground as a narrow base of support. The best real life example, if you ever played basketball or volleyball, you're jumping to spike a ball, you're jumping to block a shot and snap the rim. You're going to jump off 2 feet or even 1 feet, but your foot's usually going to be underneath your hip. If I said stand under the rim and jump up and try to snap the rim, but stand in a sumo stance, or if you're at the net and you want to block someone and you're in a sumo stance before you jump, you're not going to get as high because you can't exert as much force into the ground. So that's kind of the variation with the sumo versus the conventional. So strength and weak ranges. Now, if you want to get better at doing an exercise like a pull-up, believe it or not, the weaker range is when the muscles are in a contracted state and short, not in a lengthened state like the bench press. Oh, Rob, wouldn't that be nice? I used to be able to dunk a women's ball in my day, and I'm 175 centimeters, and that's a pretty big, like, I don't know if you understand, that's a big deal for a guy my size. What was I saying? I'm a big deal for a guy my size, yeah. I used to be able to dunk that. Strength in the weak ranges in the pull-up, it's actually when the muscles are in a contracted position. So we're doing a pull-up. The hardest part's actually going to be from here to here. That's why everyone can do rep one and two like this. And as the reps go on, we're not getting as high. So if someone has weak ranges there, we're going to program one count pauses, two count pauses, three count pauses in those ranges. We might offset some of the body weight so more reps can get done, where we're using bands or an assistance somewhere to do a pull-up. But we want to spend time in those weak ranges. So to get stronger and bust through plateaus, first off, identify the weak ranges and then spend more time there with your programming. Question to everyone. You can type in the chat or mute yourself. If I'm spending more time doing paused reps in these weak ranges, should I increase my weights, keep my weights the same, or decrease my weights?
Decrease.
Yeah, 100%. You got to decrease. And who is it, Paul? You were talking about reducing some of your weights to improve your technique on your bench press. That's right. When we do a pause squat, we've eliminated a stretch shortening cycle or stretch reflex. So we have to spend time where we don't have that addition, that help anymore. We're also spending time in muscles that don't excite well or exert a lot of force in that position. So if I lift 200 pounds on a squat for sets of five, and all of a sudden coach says I got to do paused fives, most likely I got to reduce that load by 20% to be able to still do the exercise well and not have to cut reps high or cut reps short either. So you have to reduce the weight, you have to reduce the load that you're using. Now, this is kind of fun and it does work, but I would always program this secondary. To get through plateaus, if I'm programming adjustments for people, first off, it's going to be the weak ranges. We're going to do a lot of training in those weak ranges. Let's say we do a cycle of training in those weak ranges. Then we can follow up with overload training. Overload training is fun because you tend to reduce the range of motion. You're going to lift something and you get to lift heavier weights. So, what would this look like? This would look like doing a deadlift off a rack or a deadlift off blocks. So if I lift 300 pounds on the deadlift for say sets of five, and I'm going to do block deadlifts, there's a good chance I'm loading 320, 335, because my range of motion is going to be technically less. If I'm going to do a bench press, I could do a pin press where the pins and the safeties are out to the side. So I unrack the bar, I come down about halfway. And now I'm strengthening the top end of the bench press. I'm not going all the way down to the weak range. In trap bar, I could use a trap bar as an addition because on average, trap bar handles are higher than a conventional barbell with the same plate on. So I'm now doing a top end range. Has anyone ever used a slingshot in the gym? And I don't mean like, hey, slingshot is a bench overload tool. What it does is you put your arms through it. It's this, stretchy material here that Mark Bell made. Mark Bell originally created it for power lifters with like bad shoulders and stuff, and they could use it. But essentially, when you come down like this, the material stretches down here and it gives you a pop to go from here to here, and then your triceps shoulders kind of do the rest of the work. So can you lift more weight in it? Yeah. Is it beneficial for busting through plateaus? Absolutely, because your average load goes up. So let's say, for example, Paul, you're like, okay, bench 135. I want to get to 185 because as men, we only go up in plates, right? 25 plate, 45 plate. We only count in plates. So you're like, I want to get to 185. If you've never held at 185 in your hand, and I just say, lie on the bench, here's 185, and you just held it, your body would be shaking like crazy. Your nervous system wouldn't know what to do. It's 50 pounds heavier than your max. But what if in training, I gave you your one rep max, 135, you put on a slingshot, and now you're able to do sets of five with it? What happens is the body gets used to handling heavier loads, heavier weights. So when the day does come, when I say, now we're going to lift heavier, it doesn't be 185, but much heavier than your current one, when you hold it for the first time, you've already had that weight in your hands before. Your nervous system is comfortable. It's like, oh, I've been here before. I've held this weight before. And that can also allow you to bust through plateaus because sometimes their mental shuts down when they get a little bit of a fear factor. When they lift something they haven't lifted before, they hold something on their back. I haven't held this before. All of a sudden they're like, this is really heavy. They talk themselves out of it and they fail just from the mental aspect of it. But using overload tools like a slingshot, a pin press, a block pull can assist you and your nervous system of being able to handle those loads more down the road. For squat and squat variations, you can use wraps around your knees. You can do pin squats where you actually go three quarters of the way down, not all the way down. Or you can start at a dead stop at two quarters of the way up and go up from there. You can use leg press. I would call a leg press an overload tool because everybody leg presses more than they back squat, right? It's just that's how it is. If you take four plates aside on the leg press, you probably take two plates aside on the back squat. It's almost like simple math that way. But you can use the leg press as an overload tool because your range of motion is not going to be the same as a back squat. It's going to be a little bit less. So you can overload, you can put more weights on. But overload tools are great for that. I think I have them all. Bands and chains can also assist in that. So you could use bands to make it, easier at the lockout or easier at the bomb, depends where the band's adjusted. And same with chains. And they're fun. They're fun ways to train. Do the last thing I would say to bust through with plateaus is going to be to gain weight. Get heavier. Mass moves mass. Muscles move weight. And if you've plateaued in your strength and you've been at about the same strength for multiple years in a row, and your body weight is at the same weight for multiple years in a row, I would suggest now it's time to actually get bigger. So to get bigger, we need to eat more. We need to put on muscle by doing strength training and hypertrophy training. And then once you get bigger, your leverages even change. They change. If your back muscles, if you get a big upper back, your bench press is now much more stable. You get way more stability when you got a strong upper back. If you increase your lower body thickness, your glutes get bigger. When you lie down on the bench, your passive arch is now bigger because you got a big arse. So some people are like, oh, I wish I had an arch like her. I'm like, her arch isn't anything exceptional. She's got a big ass. I said, you want to have a big ass like her, and that'll amplify your arch. So putting on some size can change your leverages at the same time. To put on size goes right back to the very start of this presentation when I said, why are you not getting stronger? Okay, you're not recovering. Maybe you're not eating enough. Maybe your program is not addressing those things. But usually, when you get bigger, you also tend to get stronger at the same time. So, just to recap on some of the main parts here, what we can do to bust through plateaus, we can use super compensation protocols. Go really heavy, high intensity, many days out. Don't stress the body too much, and then retest. We can strengthen weak ranges, identify the weak ranges, spend more time there with isometric pauses, reduce the loads that you can train in those ranges. We can use overload tools as well, such as slingshots. Partial reps using heavier weights in those ranges. And the last one to get stronger is always going to be to gain more weight. Get heavier underneath that bar, and you can push that bar a little bit better. Unless your goal is to improve your pull-ups as a strength thing, then I always say lose 10 pounds. I used to be a strength coach for women's basketball, and I learned early on before you could cancel people that you can almost get canceled when you tell women's athletes to lose weight if they want to increase their vertical jumps. They did not like that. And I learned very quickly it was more of a sensitive topic. But they all want to increase a vertical jump. And I was like, you got to lose 10 pounds. You could lose 20 pounds. But it's true because that's easier than actually increasing your ability to jump, especially if you're female. Jumping is so genetic that everyone starts at one position. But everyone can only improve so much. But if you weigh less, that is way more beneficial than doing all this plyometric training. It's just the way physics work. So that's my presentation on how to bust through plateaus. We've got a few minutes left here, so I'll open up the floor if anybody wants to ask any questions. about that. But I have to, it's a hard shut off at 7 because I have to drive my kid to karate.
No questions. I thought it was very helpful.
Awesome. Great. Good. So either I did my job or you just woke up.
No, it's very
Glenn.
informative. You covered all the bases and stuff, which is great. So it's definitely all the stuff I've been applying, the coaching calls with you and stuff have been really helpful with the techniques, the pauses, the squats and all, lessening the weights, focusing more on the technique. And then it's like, oh God, I could feel the contraction now. Little things like that, like we talked about. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's been helping. It's
Yeah. And if you want to boost your competence in a gym setting and your confidence, you start pausing your reps all over the place. People look at you funny. They look at you differently. Like, Jesus, he's actually pausing it. That's where it's hard. Why would he pause it? Okay, it's a nice feeling to be like, hey, I can take this weight and I can sit down here and hang out for a long time. This is nice little like a gym flex to be able to pause in certain positions.
When you're overloading before trying to hit a peak, do you have a standard way of telling how many days out you should be from that?
Do you mean as like doing a super compensation?
Yeah.
So yeah, if they're doing sport, obviously it's the date of the sport. It would be like the day where you have to go. And that doesn't give you any wiggle room or flex. So you got to be pretty specific on that one there.
Or, right, I'm saying, but like, how would you know for the individual how many days before their competition?
Well, usually if I've worked with someone, we've done strength training prior, right? And we've done testing prior. So an example is if I say if I'm going to use a standard protocol and say, listen, on Saturday we're going to test your strength. So on the Monday before that Saturday, I'm going to hit them with some heavy lifts. We're going to go heavy on a squat, maybe heavy on an overhead press, and medium on a deadlift. And the Saturday rolls around, and all of a sudden they do really well and they get a lot better. I say, oh, great. So 5 days out works for you. And then if all of a sudden they do worse than they did on the Monday, I'll be like, oh, okay. How do you feel? Oh, I was tired, Chris. Like I felt like I had no pop. I felt like there's just nothing there like on Monday. Okay, you need a longer time period. But I can tell you on average, if you lift a lot of weight, you usually need a longer, 7 days, 10 days. If you lift little weight, less weight, you might be able to get that down to 3 or 4 days as well. So when I coach weight classes, I tend to see it more in the lightweights. We can do the 5 day thing. The heavies and the super heavies, we're at 10 and 14. And then if they lift a lot of weight in relation to their weight class or other people that weigh the same amount as them, we always have to push it back a little bit further. And then the individual plays a really big role, right? I mean, some people they can tolerate deadlifting two times a week. Some people can't. Once is enough. But the more you work with someone, you kind of figure out that guideline there. But what they would use, who was it? There's a Russian strength coach. There's always a Russian strength coach. Yakvalev was his name. Yakvalev probably still is. And he was really big on 7 days, nothing less than 7 days for weightlifters. So their heaviest lifts was 7 days out. And then they would always do like 40%, 50%, maybe 60% in those days leading up to the competition, but it was all about speed, speed, speed. So it depends on the lift you're trying to do as well. Weightlifting is moving heavy weights really fast. Our general strength training or powerlifting is moving heavy weights, but they move slow. So technically, powerlifters should be called weightlifters, and weightlifters should be called powerlifters because power has to do with speed, but we don't do any speed in the sport of powerlifting. Okay, cool. Well, that sums up the call here. Thank you all for coming on. I'll be on again at the first Wednesday of next month as well. So I wish you all a great 4 weeks of your training. For my guys here, we'll be in touch as usual on our WhatsApp and on our new EverFit app as well. And I wish you all a very nice weekend. So thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the week, and yeah, crush it, boys.